raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back to the Warehouse Podcast. My name is Jesse. And I am going to be basically recapping what happened over the last few days when the Orioles went to Boston and swept the Boston Red Sox. There was a lot of good things, some bad things, and I'm going to get into that. We put an episode out just a couple of days ago about Jackson Holliday. We did get an update, of course. It was Tony Kemp that ended up being DFA'd. Eli was correct. When we theorized as to what the corresponding move would be. So it was actually Tony Kemp to go, which I was surprised at. If you go back and listen to the previous episode, I had solid reasons, at least in my mind, as to why it would have been Westberg who got sent down. But it did end up being Tony Kemp. So that whole thing happened. So he probably will be no longer with us. I think that is still being sorted out, but he was signed to a major league contract. So in all likelihood, he's going to go try to find employment with another organization. We also did get the update that Jackson Holliday will be wearing number 7. This, of course, was Cal Ripken Sr.'s jersey number. There was a nice thing, Billy Ripken. There's a famous clip going around. Billy Ripken was talking about basically how Holiday's family, I guess Holiday and his family, reached out to the Ripkens and basically asked, would it be appropriate and okay with you all if I wore number 7? And they all approved, at least how the Ripken family is presenting, is that they were excited to have somebody, especially like, I guess, Jackson Holliday. The fact that he's going to be the guy that is wearing the number, that was in how they're presenting it, at least, was it is an exciting prospect for them. I have no idea whether they're deep down mixed emotions or mixed feelings about that. But the number 7 had sort of been, this is what, you know, people have been talking about this, how the number 7 had basically been informally retired, even though it hadn't been officially retired by the Orioles. So Holliday reached out. Apparently, everyone was cool with it. And now he is going to be wearing the jersey number 7 for the Orioles for the first time since Cal Ripken Sr. So that's pretty nice. And 7, I think 7 is a cool number. We will see how he does. So I'm going to go through a bit about each of the games individually. But I did, just because Jackson Holliday did come up, I did want to give sort of an update and specifics. I wanted to start the show off by talking about how he did in his first two games with the Orioles at the major league level. Offensively, no sugarcoating it exactly. It was pretty rough. He went 0-for-8 in the two games. He had 4 strikeouts. He had an RBI and he did score 2 runs. So the RBI came when he came up with runners on 2nd and 3rd. Nobody was out. And he hit a really weak ground ball to the second baseman, which scored a run, both scored a run and advanced the runner from second base to third base. So it was really badly hit. It was really weak, but arguably it was good situational hitting. It's a little hard to know how intentionally he was trying to pull the ball. And I could definitely see, based on how he sort of swung at the ball and at the pitch he swung at, that he was looking for a pitch to pull. I think most lefties coming up in that situation with runners on second and third and no outs, that's pretty standard formula, is you're going to try to pull the ball to both score the run and advance the runner. So he did not hit the ball hard, but it was good enough. It did. It checked off both boxes in that situation. So that was nice. And then the first run he scored, basically came as a result of two gifts by the Red Sox defense. First, he hit a very routine ground ball to third base. Of course, Rafael Devers was not playing at the time, and Pablo Reyes was over there and was not able to handle this very routine ground ball. And then afterwards, immediately after that, there was a very routine 4-6-3 double play ball. But David Hamilton inexplicably missed touching the bag at second base. Almost, this rarely ever happens in Major League Baseball, but it does happen from time to time. But yeah, Hamilton just missed touching second, which allowed Holiday to stay on the base paths rather than having to go back to the dugout. And immediately after both of those defensive miscues by the Red Sox, he was on base for an Anthony Santander home run, which I'll talk about a little more contextually when I get to the game specifically, but it put the Orioles ahead at the time. And then later in that same game, in extra innings, he scored another run by in the ninth inning. He was the last out. And the game ended up going to extras. Everyone calls it a ghost runner. It's not exactly a ghost runner. It's an actual real runner. But he was placed on second base because he was the last out in the ninth inning. And he did end up scoring when Gunnar Henderson immediately hit a home run. He didn't have to do a lot for that. But he did score two runs. So even in his 0-for-8, because of the Red Sox defense and because of, in some ways, luck and just being having the stars aligned so that you were the last out, and because of potentially his situational hitting or, you know, luck coming up with runners on second and third and no outs, he was able to have some production, even though he did go 0-for-8 with 4 strikeouts. So he is still in search of his first hit. Hopefully he will do that this weekend when the Orioles return home to Baltimore. It'll be nice if he does it in front of the home fans. That'll be a cool thing. He probably would have wanted to have just gotten it out of the way. I think it's sort of breaking the ice for new players coming into the league. But he will have to hopefully do it when he returns home. So it was a bit rough offensively, and he didn't look very good at the plate. He looked overmatched, it takes time. He's still figuring it out. He's only a couple games in at the big league level, and it's better that he has to figure this out now than having to figure this out in August in preparation for a playoff run. So that's a good thing, and that's why this timing for him being up right now makes sense. Defensively was sort of a mixed bag for him. He made a few routine plays and had a couple good or at least decent defensive plays. Nothing that I would say most second basemen should not make. But one came in the first inning. One of these nice plays came in the first inning of the final game in a series when Yoshida grounded out. He made a nice slide, sliding pick sort of to stop the ball. And then he used good judgment not to throw the ball home, trying to cut down the run. The infield was pulled in. So he, given that he slid and that time was required, and I think it was Duran on third base, who is a fast runner, he was smart and exercised good judgment in not trying to cut the run down. And then he made another decent play up the middle, going to his backhand and throwing from behind second base to get Tyler O'Neill. So those were the two, I would say, the nice plays that he made defensively. But there was some the fly balls and the pop-ups were more difficult for him. So in the first inning of the last game, Tristan Casas hit a fly ball down the right field line. And normally this would have been Santander's ball, but he could not see the ball almost immediately in the play. He was communicating, I don't know where the ball is. So he was basically out of the play at this point. And Holiday looked lost, basically trying to catch the ball. And it landed in fair territory for a double. And it wasn't, I'm not going to say it was routine. It definitely wasn't easy. But it was a play that most second basemen would make. And if Mateo had been there, he almost assuredly would have made it. And that we don't even have to hypothesize that much about whether most second basemen would have made it. There was a play in the first game that Tony Kemp made that was slightly different and a more difficult version of the play in the game, where basically another pop-up slash fly ball was hitting down the right field line. This one didn't have as, this one was not hit as high. So it was more difficult in that sense. Tony Kemp made a really nice sliding catch. This, of course, was just hours before he ended up getting DFA'd for Jackson Holiday. But he made a really nice sliding catch, and he also had to be a little wary of the wall and not slamming and crashing into the wall. So he had to have some awareness with that. In a way that Jackson Holiday did not on his on the pop-up slash fly ball that Casas hit. More a pop-up, I would say, than a fly ball. So that was unfortunate, and he looked lost just trying to track the ball and figure out where it was. I'm sure there was a little wind. Yeah. Again, not routine, not exactly the easiest play, but definitely a play we would expect a second baseman to make. Just as a contrast, right, Tony Kemp made that other really nice play, just kind of highlighting, I think, the difference in sort of the skill and I guess the adjustment period that Holiday is going to have to just sort of endure in order to learn and get better at second base. And then in the second game, there was also sort of a fly ball in the Bermuda Triangle between Santander, Mullins, and Jackson Holiday. And maybe the outfielders would have had an attempt at it if Holiday was sort of irrelevant in the play. But Holiday did end up calling the ball, which he definitely, you shouldn't call the ball if you're not able to make the play, if you're not sure that you're able to make the play. But he ended up calling the ball, and then he looked equally lost in being able to sort of track and follow the ball and take a good route to the ball. The route was particularly an issue in the first one I described, but was also an issue in the second play. So there's definitely gonna be an adjustment. That play was costly as it allowed a run to score. The other one was actually costly too, because there wasn't a run scored on that play, but as a result of the double that he should have caught, that runner did end up scoring. So a bit rough definitely rough offensively, and then sort of more mixed defensively. But overall, if you're looking at the totality of the defensive performance, it's not good enough, and it's not up to par yet. Of course, it's only a couple games through, plenty of time for him to improve. And I'm not stressed, I'm not panicked, I'm not worried, but definitely the defensive and the offensive performance from Holiday is going to have to improve, maybe not immediately, but at least in the next few months coming. So I don't see any reason why I would expect that not to happen. This first series, or his first couple games against the Red Sox, not exactly sufficient. He's going to have to improve. We expect him to. Not trying to be hypercritical. It's just that, those sorts of problems and defensive issues and they have consequences, and they lead to the other team scoring runs. And fortunately, in this series, it didn't cost the Orioles, as we were able to get the sweep. But in other situations, in other contexts, certainly a couple runs could be costly. So something he's going to have to work on, and we expect him to, as things progress. So just wanted to get the Jackson Holiday sort of thing out of the way. Hopefully we'll see a better series out of him when he comes home to Baltimore. We'll continue to see how he does. We're, hoping for the best for him. We hope he does well. So we just got to see. And he's just got to learn some things and figure some things out at the big league level. And we can hope and predict that he will be able to do that. So now I'll sort of like go through the games a little bit. So game one was probably the easiest game for the Orioles. The O's did win 7-1. The score at the end of the game, obviously 7-1 win looks really nice. For the first few innings, it was competitive, but the Orioles sort of broke away and there was no looking back. This was the Red Sox opening day, so it was a day game. It was probably the best weather, I think, out of the three games. And of course, the Red Sox had a nice opening ceremony. Tim Wakefield's kids, Tim Wakefield's daughter threw out the first pitch. His kids were on the field before the game. They had a lot of the 2004 Red Sox team on the field before the game. There were hugs. Jason Varitek, I think, caught the first pitch for Tim Wakefield's daughter. So, of course, I'm definitely not a Red Sox fan. I despise the Red Sox, but I will say that, especially with Tim Wakefield's death, this made sense as a opening day ceremony for the Red Sox to do before the game. And fun fact, side note, Tim Wakefield went to undergrad where Eli did. So Tim Wakefield at Florida Tech holds all the, at least as far as I know, granted I haven't gone and checked, but I believe holds all the records basically at the school for home runs, and I'm sure RBIs and batting average and all these sorts of things. But I think definitely home runs. I think at the time, if I'm remembering correct, I think he was like a first baseman, and was sort of thought of as a power hitter. For some reason or another in his career, he ended up learning the knuckleball. I'm not remembering whether that was a result of injury. I'm sort of inclined to feel like it was, but I'm not positive of that. But yeah, Eli and Tim Wakefield went to the same school. So that's pretty cool. And yeah, Wakefield having died in the past year, this ceremony made sense. For his kids to be there and to throw out the first pitch. And I'm sure it was a nice moment for Red Sox fans, even though, like I said, I am not a Red Sox fan and I do not under any circumstances like the Boston Red Sox. So as far as the actual content of the game, Corbin Burnes was great again. He didn't have a lot of strikeouts to start the game. They sort of picked up toward the end of his performance. His final stat line was 7 innings, 2 hits, 2 walks, 1 earned run. He had 6 strikeouts. Of course, the 6 strikeouts is a little less than, say, his opening day performance. But all in all, very solid. 7 innings, 1 run. We will take that every time, even from our ace. He did make... It sort of felt in at least in this way, like the first game to Mike Trout, he did make one mistake, and that was the one run he gave up. It was a hanging curveball, basically in the middle of the plate to Tyler O'Neill, who right now is hitting the best for the Red Sox. He's their four hitter. Tyler O'Neill is an interesting player. He sort of had a very up and down career in his relatively short career. Well, I guess that depends on relative to what, but he's still pretty young in his career and hopefully pretty early on in his career, for his sake. But he's really struggled, but he's off to a red hot start. I think he leads the league in home runs right now. So he's crushing the ball. And Corbin Burnes made a big mistake. That got put over the green monster by Tyler O'Neill. Other than that one blemish, great performance. Happy to see it. Corbin Burnes was good. And yeah, no problems. So basically what ended up...
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Happening. As I said, the game was tied 1-1 early in the game. The O's took advantage of an error in left field when, and this is going to be a theme of this series, the Red Sox defense, when Duran in left field just basically did not catch a very routine fly ball, just deflected off his glove. I am like almost positive it hit his glove. It might have been like a foot or two away from his glove and not actually made contact, but I'm pretty sure it did actually deflect off his glove. Just Duran did not catch this fly ball. The Orioles ended up taking advantage of this error, ended up going 3-1 off Bayo, who was the starting pitcher, who was pitching pretty well. And then, of course, after the Orioles went up 3-1, that was more than enough for Burnes, who pitched, as I said, 7 innings. And then the Orioles late in the game tacked on more runs in the 8th and the 9th. Again, in the 8th inning, the Orioles benefiting from the Red Sox shooting themselves in the foot, and having an error in the 8th inning. So that was just, watching the Red Sox play defense, it was like a high school baseball team. Maybe that's a little rude or disrespectful, but if you're in the Red Sox clubhouse, if you're Alex Cora, you need to figure out a solution to that defense because it was absolutely atrocious. So, in this game, the highlight, and this is also going to be a theme of the series, Colton Cowser had a really nice game, had 4 RBIs, went 2 for 4. So he actually did some damage. So that was really nice to see. He started, Tyler did talk a bit about the platoon situation that he thinks is emerging in left field between Hayes and Cowser. Kowser seems to be the preferred option at this point against right-handed pitchers, which is demonstrated in Kowser started every game of this series. There were three right-handed pitchers starting, three right-handed starting pitchers for the Red Sox this series, and Kowser started in every game. So it seems like he might be the preferred option. It seems like definitely against right-handed right-handed pitchers. And there's going to be potentially a platoon. Like Tyler was saying, it would make sense if against lefties, then Hayes went into play left field. But especially if Kowser, and we'll get to this. I'll talk about that more. But potentially, I could see a situation where Kowser sort of runs away with the position. Okay, maybe it's a little early for that because Hayes is just struggling at the moment, and Kowser is just had the best series basically of his major league career. There is a potential for that to happen. And then the question becomes, well, what do we do with Austin Hayes if Kowser is basically the everyday left fielder? So we'll get, I'll speak a little bit about that at the end, but that will be a theme that, I'm sure we will revisit later in this, as the season develops and as the season goes on. Kowser had a nice game offensively in game one. The four RBIs made a big difference he was a offensive contributor in that game. Game two was sort of the most perilous of the games. One the Orioles easily could have dropped. The O's went down 5-0. Cole Irvin escaped traffic in the first couple innings. There were a few runners on, but he was able to get out of it. But then in the third inning, because of the Holiday miscue that I talked about, a run scored against Cole Irvin in the third inning, and then a couple more scored in both the fourth and the fifth about Irvin. So the stat line obviously at the end of the game was not good, 5 runs in 5 innings. We know that this is going to happen with Cole Irvin. Every once in a while, there's going to be a game like this with him, maybe even more frequently than once in a while. But he really put the O's in a big hole. The O's were down 5-0. Fortunately for the Orioles, the bullpen kept it right there. And they pitched 4 scoreless innings to close out the game. Baumann the 6th, Aiken the 7th and the 8th. Baumann did get the win. Aiken came in after him, pitched the 7th and the 8th, and then Kimbrel finished it off in the 9th. And then, of course, the big highlight in this game was Jordan Westberg's big 3-run home run came late in the game and was exciting and exhilarating. It was fortunate the Orioles did not do what I thought they would do and DFA him, because who knows what would have happened if he had not been there to hit that 3-run bomb. And it was a very majestic home run too, to straightaway center field, which is pretty deep in Fenway Park. And then they have the high wall in center too. So it was great. It was a very majestic home run. It was big. It was big for him. He has been showing to be a very clutch hitter early on in this season. Of course, he had a walk-off home run earlier. That put the O's up 7-5 in that game. And of course, the bullpen, having, like I said, pitching the 4 scoreless innings, held it down, and Kimbrel got the save for us. So that was good. Good comeback win. Obviously, the big downside was Cole Irvin and the poor pitching performance from him. That was good. And then in game three was a well-pitched game at the beginning, sort of a back-and-forth game, and then it sort of exploded at the end. Rodriguez had a decent start, gave up 2 runs over, 5 2/3. Not his best, obviously, but not a bad performance. It was pretty cold, so he was, you know, I saw him, he was blowing his hand a lot. So he might have been fighting the elements a little bit. That probably had something to do with it. But overall, not a bad performance at all. If this is the worst we're getting out of Grayson Rodriguez this year, all Oriole fans will be really happy with that. So he did great. And then the bullpen was stellar again. The only blemish was Connor Wong hit a home run off Danny Coulomb. But it was back and forth in the late innings. Excuse me, the O's were down 2-1, and then they ended up taking a lead on the Santander home run that came after the Red Sox air and the miss, the Red Sox air on the Jackson Holliday ground ball, and then them just not touching the base at second because the Orioles were saved the double play by Hamilton not touching the bag at second. That gave Santander a chance to come up to the plate, and he took full advantage. He wrapped it right around the pesky pole. He needed every foot he got on that home run. But it was an exciting home run. And it put the Orioles up at the time, 3-2. Yeah, and then, of course, as I said, Connor Wong ended up hitting the home run to tie it 3-3. But that was the only run the bullpen allowed in that game. And then, of course, there was an explosion. The game went to extra innings. There was an explosion where both Gunnar Henderson and Colton Cowser in the same inning hit a home run. The Orioles scored 6 runs that inning to go up 9-4. And then, of course, we held it down from there. So, overall, a good series. We got the sweep. That's really good. Anytime, I mean, when you can go on the road and get the sweep, that's a good thing. Of course, MVP of the series, got to give it to Colton Cowser. In that third game, I didn't even mention this, but Colton Cowser hit his first 2 major league home runs. So that was the big, big highlight for Colton Cowser in his career. As I said, this series in its entirety was basically the best Colton Cowser we have seen at the major league level. Of course, we've seen him tear it up in the minors and excel there. But as far as the major leagues go, this has been the best series, the best 3 games in a row he's put together. The last game hitting his first 2 big league home runs. I could see Colton Cowser dominating when we go to Fenway Park and being able to either hit it over or hit it off the Green Monster. I could definitely see Cowser having a good career in Fenway Park. So that would be great to see. And I'll just sort of run down more specifically for Cowser. In game 1, he went 2-for-4 with 4 RBIs. He did have 2 strikeouts that game. In the second game, he went 1-for-4 with 2 RBIs, scored a run, had a walk and a strikeout. And then in the third game, that was sort of the highlight game for him of the 3, even though the first 2 were very good as well. But in game 3, he went 3-for-5, had the 2 bombs that I mentioned, had 4 RBIs and scored 2 runs. The 2 runs obviously were on his 2 home runs. Definitely in the same way, we're hoping that Jackson Holliday will break the ice and get his first major league hit. It was great to see Colton Cowser in this way break the ice, get his first couple big league home runs, especially his first big league home run. That was sort of breaking the ice. And then added another one on top of it. It was exciting. And definitely, as I said, the best we've seen from him at the big league level. And hopefully that was a taste of what we could see him do, moving forward as the season progresses. So that was really exciting to see. If I'm really nitpicking with Colton Cowser, he did actually strike out sort of in a big spot preceding Jordan Westberg's home run. So I guess if Cowser had done had been the one to hit the big home run in that spot or get the big hit, hit a big double or something like that in that spot, He basically would have had the glory of the entire series, and it would have been all about Colton Cowser. But he did strike out sort of in a big spot. At that point, the game was 5-4, and the Orioles were running out of outs. It was sort of a thing where, you know, we had to have them put the ball in play and at least get the run from third home to tie the game. Fortunately, he was bailed out, though, by the Westberg home run. So overall, like, and I say that just to sort of detail more, not to be hypercritical. Sometimes you're not, I mean, not every player is always going to get the job done. That's not a realistic expectation. But it was not even disappointing, but unfortunate that in that spot he came up and did end up striking out. So it happens. But overall, for the series, a massive series for him, 6-for-13, 3 runs scored, a whopping 10 RBIs and 2 home runs. So, great to see out of him. So Cy Young Award for the series, got to give it to Corbin Burnes. It might turn out being that this is a routine award he wins for these series recaps. But Corbin Burnes, the 7 innings, 1 run, he did great. As an honorable mention, I will say the bullpen. On paper, at least if you looked at the pitching matchups, other than the Cole Irvin game, I think you definitely give the edge to the Orioles in the pitching matchups for the 3-game set. Of course, Burnes. And then with Grayson Rodriguez, I think both of them get the edge. The Boston Red Sox rotation has done really well this year. But on paper, the Red Sox, on paper, the Red Sox, probably, you would think the Orioles would probably end up having a better, starting pitching results at the end of the series. And collectively, if you include the Cole Irvin start, that did not turn out to be the case. So the bullpen was critical for the Orioles in winning those 3 games. And yeah, the Orioles bullpen collectively is the honorable mention for the Cy Young Award. So final takeaways from the series. First off, the Orioles, this has been a theme. Other than a few games in the Angels series, overall, the Orioles have really struggled getting to the starting pitching. The Red Sox starters were effective, and the Orioles were sort of bailed out in a way by the fact that the Red Sox starters didn't go very deep into the games. Bayo went 5 1/3, and then Whitlock and Crawford went 5 each. So the Orioles were fortunate that we ended up seeing a lot of the Red Sox bullpen, which allowed the Orioles to take advantage of a lot of these middle inning relievers. And as I said, like the Red Sox defense. But the Orioles were able to take advantage of some of those weaker relievers, but the Orioles didn't get a lot out of off the starting pitchers, which again for Boston, has the starting pitchers have been the strength of the team for them so far this year. But this has been sort of a recurring thing. The Orioles are coming back and sort of deferring the runs toward the end of the game. And in the long term, the Orioles are going to need to find a way to start scoring runs off the starting pitchers in the game. The Orioles bullpen, like I said, has been doing really well. The Orioles have, and Brandon Hyde has really benefited from our shakier, quote unquote, shakier bullpen arms. They had a nice series in Boston. Tyler had previously expressed concerns on this show about Mike Baughman, and he bounced back in the series. He pitched well. Keegan Aiken also pitched well, and Jacob Webb contributed. So the bullpen overall has been doing well. And that was a concern for me coming into the season. It is still a concern long-term because some of these pitchers on paper don't have long track records. And or if they do, are not great, all of them, right? So I was a little worried about the bullpen, but in this series, the Orioles bullpen was really critical in us winning the three games, and had a big role to play. The other thing I'll say,
raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Cedric Mullins quietly had a nice series. He was definitely overshadowed by Colton Cowser, especially them both being outfielders. But he had a really nice series. He went 4-for-10. He had 4 walks, which is great. He scored 5 runs, had 2 RBIs. But he had some really good at-bats. Even some of the outs that he recorded were some nice line drives that could have been hits if they were placed differently and that sort of thing. But yeah, 4-for-10. And the 4 walks is also a good demonstration that hopefully we see him sort of returning to form. Of course, he struggled early on in the season, but I think there's a lot to be encouraged with his at-bats in this Boston series. Another big takeaway is that the Red Sox series, the Red Sox defense basically just handed the Orioles the series. I think it's not at all a stretch to say that if the Red Sox had a competent defense, that the Red Sox would have won 2 out of the 3 games against us, right? The only one I think it's arguable that the Orioles would have won anyway without the benefit of the Red Sox defensive woes would have been the first game when Corbin Burnes pitched 7 innings with 1 run. The Orioles were able to get runs off the bullpen. I think that probably, of course, you know, there's always issues talking about hypothetical universes and what could have and didn't happen. Of course, everything is off, so everything could have been different, et cetera, et cetera. But overall, it's very arguable the Orioles would have won that getting to the Red Sox bullpen. But games 2 and 3, a lot of the Oriole rallies, a lot of the Orioles runs a lot of the rallies were initiated by defensive errors and miscues and problems and disasters for the Red Sox, which ended up leading to rallies and the Orioles scoring a lot of runs. Santander in the third game never would have had that opportunity with Holiday on second to put the Orioles on top with that 2-run home run. Of course, he would have came up the next inning, but probably he would have faced a different pitcher at that point, et cetera, et cetera. The Orioles really benefited and took it full. The Orioles took full advantage of the errors the Red Sox had given them. We need to not rely, of course, we need to not rely on just the other team being horrible defensively. I think it's very, very possible / likely the Orioles, just given the context of when these errors happened, et cetera, it's very possible that in a different universe or in a different dimension or whatever, that the Orioles facing a competent defense would have walked away having won only one of these 3 games. So, I think there was some luck involved in the final sort of outlook of these 3 games, a luck that we're not always going to be able to rely on. So the Orioles did take full advantage, but thinking about it in that way, it's not necessarily the most comforting feeling, the fact that the Orioles swept, because it could have gone very differently just with even an average major league defense on the other side. So there is that to note and that to point out, even though overall I am still excited the Orioles did get the sweep on the road in Boston. And then the other final takeaway I have is that we are seeing the resiliency and we are seeing the confidence of this baseball team sort of come to fruition. So I feel like the Orioles have picked up right where we left off last year in this aspect of the game, the resiliency and the confidence. In this series, we were trailing in every game, oftentimes not by a lot. Most notably, the biggest trailing was when we were down 5-0. But the Orioles didn't just give up. A lot of teams just sort of go quietly at that point. And the Orioles, even though taking advantage of errors, did fight back in the game. And that was really, really nice to see. And it's exciting. The Orioles are playing exciting baseball right now. You can see the confidence in how they're playing. Collectively as a team, there may be a couple exceptions where guys are not that confident out there. Won't name names with that, but I do have a couple people in mind. But you definitely see the resiliency and the confidence of this team. So that from last year is still here. It's still vibrant. And because of that, yeah, you see this exciting baseball that the Orioles are playing. And we've come to expect this exciting baseball, especially from last year. We expect this resiliency. We expect the comeback wins. We expect the Orioles to never give up and to never go away and to scratch and claw and fight to get back into games. So even though our play, I think, is far off from where it needs to be and from the peak of where we need to be, when we get to midseason form, hopefully this team looks different in terms of the play than it does right now. But we still see the exciting baseball that the Orioles were used to last year. That is still here, and I don't think that's going away. So that is a big positive of the Orioles, and excited about that moving forward. A couple notes before we look ahead. The Orioles did acquire Johan Ramirez from the Mets. It's a little unclear what exactly is going to happen with that acquisition. We got to see how he fits into the bullpen. In order for him to make the active roster, the Orioles are going to have to make a move and option somebody. Or the Orioles can try to sneak him through waivers. But there's a lot of interest in Ramirez. A lot of teams have sort of been giving him chances, and it may not be likely the Orioles can sneak him through waivers. I think it's possible that in order for him to make the big league team, the Orioles are going to have to option somebody. So we might hear about that coming up. And then the other thing is that the Orioles made an acquisition for an infielder from the Angels. His name is Levon Soto. So he got optioned to AAA Norfolk, so he's going to be there. So don't know a lot about him, but we will see as both of them either make impacts on the major league level. Hopefully Soto is going to have an impact at Norfolk. And then we'll see what Ramirez does. If the Orioles got him, I actually have a little excitement about him. I think the Orioles are going to try to find a way to get him onto the team. And then, okay, maybe he's not a Yennier Cano or he's not that good. But I think there's a possibility, especially if, you know, since so many other teams have been interested in him, there must be some talent there. And I'm excited for the prospect of the O's harnessing that talent and trying to help Ramirez reach his potential. So we'll see with that. Coming up, sort of a big series. It's a big series for a few reasons. For one, Jackson Holliday is going to make his home debut at Camden Yards, which will be really exciting. Hopefully we'll see his first hit over the weekend, as I mentioned earlier. But we are going to be playing the Brewers, who, for those who remember, we recently had a quote-unquote blockbuster trade with. It's arguable whether it's blockbuster just because The number of players involved in the trade wasn't massive. Normally, I think of a blockbuster trade as like 8 players from 3 different teams getting shuffled around and moved around and stuff like this, or the Manny Machado trade, for instance, when we got 5 players in return for Machado. But arguably, it is a blockbuster because the Orioles acquired the ace and gave up 2 very, very solid pieces. So we are going to be playing the Brewers coming up. And because we had a big trade with the Brewers, we have guys that are facing their old team. So Corbin Burnes is going to get to pitch against the Brewers. He is going to pitch in Game 3. And then, of course, what I'm excited about is the return of Joey Ortiz to Baltimore and the return of DL Hall. Obviously, for personal reasons that we've mentioned on the show, I personally am more excited for the return of Joey to Camden Yards. Not that I want the Orioles to lose even 1 game of this series, but if the Orioles can win all 3 games and somehow Joey Ortiz can also have a really nice series against us, I would love to see that. So I'm excited to see him play. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to see him play in person. That would have been amazing. So we're going to see Ortiz, and DL Hall is going to be pitching the 2nd game of the series. So we're going to see him face the Orioles too, which will be interesting. He's being used as a starter now for the Brewers. He's not a bullpen piece like we were using him. He's been stretched out. He's starting. I think the Brewers are at least trying to give him a shot there. Whether he's a starting pitcher long-term for the Brewers, I think still remains to be seen. But they're trying him out and auditioning him there now. So the Orioles haven't been doing great against left-handed pitching, so that'll be an interesting matchup to evaluate and to think about. The Brewers have a better record than the Orioles. The Brewers are tough, I gotta say. I've watched some of their games. I feel like they're a very well-rounded team. Obviously, they're a very good organization. They've been running a good system for a while. They've been competitive very routinely. So the Brewers are 8-3. The O's are 8-4. The Brewers have 1 less loss than the O's. Identical number of wins, of course. I think it's not going to be an easy series. I think we have to play better than we did against Boston. And the first pitching matchup is not a favorable one for the Orioles. The Brewers are throwing Freddy Peralta, who has been a Cy Young candidate in the past. He has Cy Young type stuff. He's a great pitcher in Major League Baseball. I'm going to be excited to watch him pitch, even though I'm a little afraid. And I hope the Orioles find a way to get some runs and some production off him. But Freddy Peralta is a great pitcher. And in the first game, he's pitching against Tyler Wells. So the Brewers definitely have the edge in the pitching matchup for that game. I'm sure the pregame predictions and whatever betting lines and whatever are not favorable for the Orioles in this game, even though we are home. So maybe it is, but at least the pitching matchup is not favorable. So I think this series will be a bit of a test for us. We're going against a really solid team. We do have home field advantage. So hopefully we can still do well and at least win 2 out of 3. I wouldn't be surprised or even disappointed if the Brewers get 1 game. Even if the Brewers take 2 games from us, I might not even be disappointed. I'd like to see us win, but the Brewers, as I'm saying here, they're a good team, I think, this year. And the first 11 games for them has shown that they're going to be competitive. So we will see. Of course, we will be back after the weekend to have a recap of that series. So it should be exciting. If nothing else for this upcoming series, it's going to be really exciting. Should be very competitive games. So I'm really excited for the baseball component of what this will be like. I was going to say, it sort of could resemble like what a playoff matchup would look like in terms of like the quality of these two teams. Obviously, it's not for various reasons because it's early in the year and we're not down to the wire pushing for wins. And so it's, you know, I guess it has some characteristics that in the quality of play that might look like the playoffs, but overall, you know, that there are a lot of contrast to that opinion too, of course. So anyway, it should be really exciting though. I'm excited to see how the Orioles will do. This is like, yeah, as I said, I think a good mini test for us to see. And yeah, the Orioles have, so this will be good for them. I think, you know, we're going to have to elevate our game a little bit in this series. So I'm really excited to see what happens. So with that, please give us a rating, give us a review. Feel free to subscribe to us on YouTube, like, share the video, do all the things. Feel free to comment any thoughts, any analysis that you may have on the Orioles. We love hearing this sort of thing to challenge our perspectives. Feel free to follow us on X and on Instagram at The Warehouse Pod. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, criticisms, you can feel free to email the show at thewarehousepod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. This has been The Warehouse Podcast. My name is Jesse, and go O's.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.